Welcome to another edition of The Spirit Revolution. My name is Philip Coppens, and unfortunately Kathleen can't be with us. But our special guest is somebody I have known for a very long period of time, and his name is Herman Hager. Herman, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Philip. Nice to be in your show.
And first of all, I will have to say that it's very rare that Herman and I speak in English to each other, because we have known for each other for 15 years. So this is a bit weird, but I thought that if we were to go to do this in Dutch, probably 99.9% of our listeners would probably not follow what we're doing here. But the reason why Herman is on our show is because Herman and I, more than 15 years ago, began an adventure together, which was to try and bring awareness of frontier sciences to a Dutch audience. And in recent years, Herman has continued this course, and specifically has made Frontier Sciences Foundation, as it was founded on that very interesting day of the 2nd of February 1995, into something which really has made an impact in the frontier sciences world, so to speak, of the Netherlands. There is a Frontier magazine, which is a newsstand magazine in the Netherlands and Belgium. There is Frontier Publishing, which publishes books. There is a Frontier bookshop in the very heart of Amsterdam. If anybody ever is in Amsterdam, and specifically in the area of the Anne Frank Museum, please go and see the bookshop. It's a wonderful place. And there's a Frontier Award, which annually is given to somebody in the Netherlands who has made a vital contribution to Frontier Sciences. There is quite often an annual Frontier Symposium, and I'm probably leaving out a few things. Frontier Books, which is a catalogue or a catazine of things. So, Herman, the very first thing I'm going to ask you is, do you ever have 5 minutes of free time with all of these things lined up?
Yes, I have 1 hour of free time this time to speak to you. No, when you speak about all our activities, it sounds like quite a lot. It's real. But when it's like a hobby of you, then it's easy to do all those things. And it's an interesting subject to work with it. So you don't even feel it is work. So it's plenty of free time.
And making your hobby into a profession is really what typifies, I think, part of your walk of life over the last 15 years as well. Because when all of this started out, you were a manager in a agricultural software company. And you basically let go of that to devote yourself entirely to this field. So tell us a bit about how that transition occurred and why you felt that transition had to occur in your life.
Yes, it's part of the life story. In 1995, as you said, we erected the foundation, Frontier Sciences Foundation. But before that, I was interested in these kind of subjects, spiritual subjects, frontier sciences subjects. When I was young, I was interested in it. But the older you became, you were reading more and listening more to people. And when I read a book about Atlantis and Egypt, there was something like a switch was turning. I said to myself, okay, this is very interesting. When there is a connection between Egypt and Atlantis, I want to know everything about it. So I was reading a lot of books. I was going to lectures. I spoke to a lot of people all around the world, to meetings I went, et cetera, et cetera. And this was all beside my job, of course, because you have to find a way of living. But this was my interest in these subjects was growing and growing. And before 1995, there was another organization in the Netherlands called Contact Network International. It was erected by David Summers, an Australian guy who lived in Holland at that time. And I and other people were working together with him to inform the people about these interesting subjects. And at that time, there was an Exposure magazine. And when that guy left going back to Australia, we decided to continue his work, but change the name, and that's how Frontier all started. And still at that time, I had an ordinary job. And it was slowly taking more time to work with Frontier and all that subjects. And slowly I was doing more work for Frontier than for my ordinary job. And it felt like very natural that it has to go that way. It had to go that way, because it was it was really me. It was my interest. So it was very logical that I had to go that way. And it was not difficult to say, okay, I stop with my job and go on with Frontier 100%. And as you said, it was growing and growing in all those days, from only a magazine to a bookshop to a publishing company, etc., etc. So it was going very smoothly and very naturally, as I can say.
When you read that book about the connection between Atlantis and Egypt, did you ever think you would devote your life completely to these subjects?
No. I was born in the northern part of Holland, and it's very, very conservative. So that's how I grew up, and thinking about the possibility that I was devoting my life to these kind of subjects when I was young, no way. But it's how it's going in your life. Things can change pretty fast, and it feels just like I said, very natural. And when I read the book, it was a starting point to really find out what was Atlantis, and it's still one of my main subjects, to find out the truth about that old culture or old times, whatever it was. I didn't expect at that time what it would mean for my life.
Now, Frontier is far more than ancient mysteries, ancient histories. You have branched out into various directions. There is what I would call the exploration of the mind, the question where we are with politics. Are there the big conspiracies? Is there a truth to be unveiled? Are there additions to our dietary requirements, specific products which help us, specific products or medicines which heal, and which the standard way of approaching things of the medicine world are really not saying or are not interested in? Where do you see the Netherlands? What kind of society is the Netherlands where you operate in? You said yourself that you come from a relatively conservative background, yet you have made a quite natural voyage in accepting all of these things. But where do you see yourself, and where do you see specifically the Netherlands as a first part in this world?
Okay, that's an interesting question. But first of all, I want to say all those subjects we are working with, you as well, Kathleen, I still see there is a big connection. It's not a different subject, but there is all a connection. And to me, there is Atlantis is my main subject, but so there... everything is almost going back to Atlantis, even if it's politics or old cultures or UFOs or whatever. But what is my what does Frontier mean for the Netherlands and to the world? That's what I said. A very good question. Because normally I don't think about these things, because you do your thing and you don't look around what's the impact of doing all these things. But when I look around and hear around, you hear from a lot of people that they are very happy that there is a magazine, there is a bookshop in Amsterdam or in the Netherlands. And they see that what we did in a long time of period, 10 or 15 years, to collect all that information, the people who are just started to interest in these subjects have everything easily available through the magazine or through the bookshop. Sometimes you have passengers who fly or passing Schiphol, they land on the airport in Amsterdam. They take an extra few hours, come to our shop, do some shopping and continue their flight. Because they know in front of the bookshop there is a lot of information available, all in one shop, and they can get the information easily. So they don't have to take a lot of time to gather all that information. So that is also one of the purposes of Frontier, to spread the information for the people who are interested in it. And in those 15, 16 years we are operating now, you see that a lot of people like that and use that information, what we collected. And you see that it's more growing and growing. When we even get closer to 2012, people get more aware and want to have more information. You see that our magazine is getting more and more subscribers, even in these days with the economical crisis or e-books or whatever, but it's still increasing. So we are really helping people to spread the information and get more aware of what is happening in this world. And this is especially for Holland and in Belgium, but we also have, like you said, the bookshop and a mail order system. So we have a lot of people around whole Europe who are ordering books from us. And what we want to do in the future, in the close future, near future, is to publish our magazine also in the English language so that people from all around the world can read the information we collect. So, yeah, we help a lot of people to help them on their journey to awareness or to, what you call spiritual growing, etc., etc.
I was actually in the bookshop a few weeks ago, and there was a very interesting person who came in there, and he basically said he saw all the books, which were obviously in every bookshop, and he basically said, there are too many books, I just want to have one or two or three or five books, which kind of like guide me through my life and give me the answers to the questions I am looking for. And I think the people who go into the new world, so to speak, there are two types. One of them who want very quick, very fast answers to some of the life's big questions. And then other people who do like the fact that there are thousands of books and realize that their own path is somewhere located within those thousands of books and they kind of like have to map their own road about. How do you see those two people coming into the bookshop, or are there other types, or what do you see specifically as to the person who enters that bookshop or makes contact with you and wants to have an answer to the big question in life?
Ooh, you have good questions, Philip. Very interesting questions. You have different kind of people. Some people who are passing our shop or entering our shop from the beginning and are still collecting information and reading the books. And there are also some people, like you say, who want to go very fast. They want to have fast food information. And there are also people who are entering the shop who are entering a complete new world. They were not aware of these kind of things, and they feel that when they open the door of our shop, they are going to another planet, because they were never aware of what is going on besides the things they hear and see in their normal life. And some of those people are coming back and are working on their awareness. So there are a lot of different people who are coming to the shop, but you see that most of the people are already open to these subjects and want to grow more and more or dig deeper and deeper. And it is also same what happens with our shop as well. We grow with our customers, with our people who are entering the shop. So when you look at the shop in the beginning, it was mainly conspiracy books, UFO books, old culture books. But it grew to more spiritual books as well, health books, all those kind of things. In the recent years, we also sell health products to help the people to choose the right, things whole foods.
Food supplements.
Food supplements, exactly. So the people who grow is the same like we grow as organization, and it's going. What I see around me, it's a slow movement. It's not an instantly thing, but it's slow. Yeah, slow awareness of people. Growing to 2012 and beyond, of course. But it's very interesting to see what kind of people are entering the shop. Sometimes people have a lot of experience and a lot of stories to tell, and sometimes you have to stop them because we have to work as well. But it's very interesting to see what kind of people are entering the shop.
Absolutely, and it really is. I think the experience you have is a very grassroots experience, in the sense that people, as you say, sometimes do walk off the street into the shop and see this alien world existing in a very mundane format, in the sense that the bookshop looks like any other bookshop. It's not a drug shop or even a coffee shop or anything like that. It's a very down-to-earth, real environment, and yet people have no idea sometimes that all of this information is out there. To some extent, you have also had experience with the Dutch media, with international media. Whenever these things happen, like MMS controversies is one I believe the Netherlands had in recent months. How do you see the world as a whole reacting to this standoff, so to speak, between the conservative world, the world it was, and the emerging world? Where do you see yourself sitting, and how do you observe these two worlds interacting with each other?
Yeah, we have an old world and a new world, and the old world is like we see on television, in the mainstream media, etc. And we at Frontier are part of the new world, and also a lot of internet websites, blogs, Facebook, etc. There is fast, I'd call it, the development is going pretty fast of people who get aware and are part of the new world. They don't watch television anymore, they don't believe in politics, etc. And I think it's growing that fast, going closer to 2012 and also after 2012, that people want to have their freedom back and want to not to be connected with the old world and the church, like the school system, the political system, etc. They want to be free and want to go their own way and be aware of what is life. And I think it's going that fast that the old world, the society we are living in doesn't have an answer to that, and that the people who are ruling us are not the rulers for the whole, for all the people anymore, but for all the time smaller getting amount of people, if you know what I mean. So the rulers are for a small amount of people, but the large amount of people are going into a total different direction. You see it in the Arabic world at this moment. You have there some leaders who want to have the people to do what they say, but that's old times, that's over and out, and mainly the young people want to go into another direction. You see it happening there. It's starting a little bit in Spain, but I think it's going to happen coming years around the whole world. People do not accept the world as it is, like the rulers want to have it. So it's going into the direction of the new world, and I don't know exactly what it's going to be about, but it will be a better world than it was, because the people are more aware of what is going on, and with a growing awareness of the people, and mainly the young people, who are very spiritual and very wise, that we will grow into a new world. That's what I think.
And I think it's a very interesting world we live in at the moment, because really when we're talking about politics, I travel to many countries and I see the differences. And what I find interesting, not necessarily good or fascinating, about the Netherlands and Belgium is specifically that those two countries are now ruled by minority governments, because what's happened is that the old world, people are no longer happy with that. They don't want to vote for that. And they have these political parties which are revolutionaries, but at the same time, they're not really, I always feel, what the people really want. But yet they vote for them because at least they're not the old world. But at the same time, there is this really weird situation which has made Belgium world record holder in not having a government, in the sense that the end result is that there is no rule, that nobody can make a decision to actually get a democratic majority thing. And so this rule at the moment in the Netherlands and Belgium is definitely of the minority. We've seen in the UK, where we are looking at, for the first time in a very long period of time, a coalition government of two parties having to come together to get that majority going. As you said, other countries are much further away already by absolutely saying enough of this old world. There's so much happening. But there is really no person out there at this moment in time, I think, who is, and I mean politician-wise, politics-wise, who is really aware of the real situation and is able to embrace that. And this is a very difficult question, and maybe you have an answer for it, but I'm definitely leaving it as a rhetorical question for all our listeners as well. It's like, what do you think really needs to happen for this breakthrough in politics and society to come about? What is like the top things which you see people are looking for change-wise, and what would really make a breakthrough?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I always say that the big difference will come when we we have the ability to be independent, and that is... And it sounds a little bit weird, maybe, but I think we will get it through energy, through free energy, because that makes us dependent from the rulers, from the society. But when we have free energy, it's energy you can get free. You can live everywhere you want. You don't have to do what the rulers want. I think that will be the moment that. That the society will change completely, and then it will not be a hierarchic, how to call it?
Hierarchical?
Yes, structure in society, but it will be more from the individual. So it's. I think in the future we don't really need the big rulers, the leaders, but we need to make wealth from our own, from the individual people, and so it's more, yeah, it looks like communistic, but that's not what I think or mean. But it's more that the power is coming out from the person itself and not from above. And that is why free energy can help the people to be independent and can do what they want. And they can live where they want and they can make their life what they want, because you don't have to be a part of the system, because you don't need fuel anymore. You don't need electricity anymore. You can grow your own food if you want. Because you can have enough energy what you need. You can even live in the desert if you want.
And just to clarify for our listeners, with free energy, you're not talking about getting your electricity for free from the power companies, but really the new inventions or the hidden inventions of the likes of Tesla and so many others who were able to really apply the laws of physics in such a way that novel ways of generating energy came about.
Yes. Tesla, you meant him. He was one of the guys who was planning to build 7 towers around the world. And he said he was able to supply enough energy with 7 towers for the whole world to give all the people free energy as much as they wanted. And that was almost 100 years ago. So that development of the technique was available already 100 years ago. So it has been suppressed, or I don't know what they did with it. But it's still possible, of course, to use that kind of technique. And it's the same with Schauberger. He was working on it as well. And all those inventors who were active before the Second World War were able to do all those kind of things. But the leaders of those times decided not to use it for the common public, but maybe to use it for themselves or not to use it at all. But I think at that time, before the Second World War, we made a wrong choice, or the leaders made the wrong choice, not to use it also for us, for the people, but to suppress it. And that's why we live in a world how it shouldn't be. It should be a complete other world. But 70, 80 years ago, they made another decision.
Absolutely. And I've, when you look at a person like Tesla, we live in a world which was basically created by him. But I also feel that the world we live in is only about 50% of Tesla's, that makes sense. It's like they took from Tesla the things which were basic and which could make money, but then he wanted to go further away. And it's actually something which I feel is so often the case when you look at the great scientists. We all know about Wernher von Braun and everybody else in Germany, and we consider them to be Nazi scientists because this is the way they were employed. But really, Wernher von Braun before the war wanted his rockets to be developed so that he could go to Mars for exploring that planet. He didn't want to see his rockets deployed to kill thousands of people. But again, the world took parts of his brilliant mind and applied it, and only much later, when he was working for the Americans, did it kind of like get used to for the Apollo space program to go to the moon. So there's always this genius, this beautiful mind which tries to do things, but then there's also, it seems, the corruption of that, or only the distillation of parts of it. Which kind of brings us to where we are today, because I was hinting at the MMS thing earlier. You see this on a daily basis, that innovations in science and technology still have a tremendous difficulty in getting out there? And is that simply because there is the old world and the new world? Or what is really going on, do you feel? And do you think certain changes in approach in getting this information out would actually be beneficial in getting that information out more easily?
Yeah, we have the internet, of course, and that makes us more independent from the society. You mentioned the example of MMS. Maybe it's good to tell the people what happened here in the Netherlands with
absolutely.
MMS. MMS is also called Mineral Miracle Supplement. It's invented by Jim Humble, who was a gold digger, and he needed some water to clean. And he found out that when you put some chloride in it, and it was possible to drink it. And he developed it, and finally he found out that combination of magnesium and chloride, magnesium chloride, you say it in English, I believe, special combination reacted with some kind of acid, you get MMS, Mineral Miracle Supplement. And he found out it's not only good to clean the water, it's also very good to clean the body from a lot of diseases. And he found out that you can use it for a lot of diseases or other problems you have with the body. And it's a very cheap thing. It's very easy to make a thing. It's a liquid thing of two bottles, and you combine it, and then you drink it, sometimes for a few days, sometimes for a few weeks. And a lot of people got cured from diseases they got already for 15 years or 20 years. We had those experiences with people who came in our shop who were so happy to use this solution. They had some stomach problems, by example, for 15 years, and they used MMS, and it was gone instantly. And MMS is, I think, now around 4 or 5 years on the market, and it's getting more and more popular. We sell a lot of MMS in our shop. And, of course, we are not allowed to sell medicines, and we don't say it's a medicine, but when it's curing a lot of things, it looks like a medicine, but it is not a medicine. So what's happening then when such an easy and cheap product is getting popular? The mainstream medical organizations want to stop this, of course, because they want to sell medicines. They don't want to people get those cheap things to help their illness. So what's happening then? You get a reaction from the mainstream media or the mainstream medical companies. They send from a very popular TV program in the Netherlands, they sent a camera crew to our shop and also to other shops who are selling MMS. And undercover, they do as if they want to buy MMS. And they ask my colleague about what MMS is good for, is it a medicine, etc., etc. And they did it not only in our shop, but also in other shops. And what did they do in the TV broadcasting of all this material? They make the product very ridiculous. They show only people who say they didn't get better from MMS, but they got more ill or they had extra problems with using MMS. So they showed only one side of MMS, how bad it was, and how bookshops like us were selling these kind of things, and it's not allowed, and blah, 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 blah. So they want to show that MMS is not good to use. And that's always the same reaction when something is getting popular. It's good for the people, and it's not from the mainstream thing, then they attack us. But there's also a positive side. people who are were watching the show, the TV show with MMS, they see that on purpose they are misleading the viewers of the TV program, and they think, oh wait a minute, this is not good. This product seems to be good, but they how do you say it? So what I want to tell is that the reaction of some people who are watching the program are exactly the opposite, and they were coming to our shop and they wanted to MMS. So it was also a kind of a positive introduction to some people to MMS. But always you see the same reaction when something is getting too good, they want to stop it. And I think this is the day, this is the time they can't stop it anymore. And especially because internet we have, and it's easy to supply this information through the internet, to the people.
And definitely, I think the people are waking up definitely to the fact that the reality, the way it is presented to them, isn't real reality, if that makes sense. It's reality seen through the eyes of those who have the money to present their point of view. This was very much at the origins of Frontier, this idea that money buys you the reality you want to portray. We see this in the medical community, where, as you said, Big Pharma has a very strong hold on that. We all know that being elected as American president pretty much comes down to how much money can you spend on a presidential campaign, and the person who can outspend the other one is likely going to win. Mm-hmm. Media, again, it's there's an awful lot of money involved there, to get the point of view across of like what is real and what isn't real. We turn to its science, and science once again is all about money. The digs, just to bring the history point in there, digging in ancient Egypt, trying to find evidence of whatever, is all about universities, is all about money, is all about being able to buy stuff and having the power to buy it. And people definitely are beginning to realize that is happening, that money buys you your perspective on reality. And so that is falling. But at the same time, what I always find funny specifically in the Netherlands is that the Netherlands was the birthplace, so to speak, of reality television. But reality television is just as fake as the kind of like, you know, the fiction which television is presenting as well. So it's a very perplexing world we live in right now. It's, as you said, people are getting so many messages from so many different places. Do you feel that sometimes people want to take the easy way out, like that they really settle for something, whether it's the traditional perspective or what I would then call the new age perspective, but that it isn't real either way? Or do you feel that within the new age community there is more of a sense of continuous searching?
Now the searching is going on, I believe, but you feel that more people want to live their own life. They want to get rid of all the shit they hear on television and read in papers and what they have to do from the government. It feels like the people want to get more independent. Maybe it looks like they get a little bit egoistic as well, but I think they are overwhelmed by all the developments in these days, just like the earthquake in Japan with the breakdown of the power plant of there. They one hand they get concerned, but the other hand they know they can't do anything about it, so they live their own life and go into their own direction. That's what I feel and see more and more.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think people are looking for? I mean, independence is great, but what do they want to do with their lives is, I guess, the question.
Yeah, they want just to live their life without all those complicated things which are happening at this moment. They just want to live. That's it.
Basic life.
Yes. And it looks like, I don't know if you know the books of Anastasia from Russia.
I'm pretty sure, we haven't discussed these books, but I'm pretty sure many of our listeners are familiar with them.
Yeah, and that's what she said. It's exactly the same what she says. It's a female shaman from Siberia in Russia, and she grew up in the nature, and her parents teach her how to learn from nature, and by that way she was a kind of a woman. She still is alive, who interacts with nature and communicates with nature, and also knows a lot of things because she's open to everything. She didn't went to a school or university, but she knows everything because she can tune into the fields, you know. And what she tells us is the same what's happening at this moment, that people have to get independent, but also you have to live your life. It's not more than that. If you want, you can grow your own food, and she propagates to that every family should have one hectare of ground for their house, for their garden, etc., etc. And that is what I see around me, a lot of people would like to get into that direction. Not a complicated life, not a busy life, a stressed life, but yes, live a life just as we are.
Mm-hmm. Back to basics and yes. Kind of stripping some of the complexities of this world, because definitely I always find it extremely funny how money has become this number which sits on a computer somewhere in a bank, and it's completely fictional right now.
Yes.
And we have a completely fictional economy around it, and countries do these gigantic trade-off of billions of dollars against each other, but it really is a very complex system which is trying to get the world going, but is also enslaving the world and enslaving politicians to some extent. In the UK, we have an entire system of new government who is trying to basically say to the world, hey, you know, we have to go through these kind of things. We need to lay people off. We can't do this. We can't do that because we have to pay off our international debt. And it's almost like saying, we have to pay this off because God has wanted us to ship money to wherever God is supposed to be receiving it. There's this irreality to some of these aspects, and I think the more stress you put on people, the more people also want to get away from it because they also waken up to the irreality of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So
they get sick of it, yes.
And quite often physically sick of it as well.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the reason why they get sick, yes. Yeah.
So turning it back to these people who are searching, they're also searching clearly, because that's another reason why they come into the bookshop, some of the bigger questions in life. What is the truth about Christianity? Did we go to the moon? Is there a giant conspiracy? What about Atlantis? What about ancient civilizations? Is there a God? How does all of this question sit in there in the new time? Do people really want to have strong answers, or are they quite happy to just realize that certain big questions at this moment in time cannot be answered because of the way the world works and is at the moment?
Yeah, this is like running around in circles. Look, people start with questions. They want to have answers, and they look for answers. They read books. They talk to people, and then they find out when they have answered one question, they have 10 new questions, and that's going on and on. And the more you know about the subject, the less you know. It's not that easy to find the only and the real answer. And that's why I say you're running around in circles, because when you have a long time research this kind of information, you're coming back to where you started from and you think, okay, I know a lot more now, but what did I gain? What did I get further? And then you find out that what I told before, we don't want to have a complex life. We want to go back to the basics. And in the mind, you get more richer and richer, but it's not that, how do you say this? what I want to say is that that the more information you get, you don't get all the answers, and then you get a feeling, okay, this is enough, and I want to live my life. I don't want to research my whole life till my death. I want to do what I have to do.
But I also think to some extent that takes you away from the cerebral thinking about things and actually living your life, so to speak.
What do you mean?
What I mean is, like, there are certain people who have the big questions and will take that information and at night read about it, but not really change their lives until they come to that point of reality that there isn't just this great understanding which is going to arrive out of a book or from reading, but actually that there is a physical component of an active component to it, which is you need to change your life.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, you're correct. But what is the question?
I was just kind of like just saying that there is this realization, really, that it's not just about being passive and reading, but actually that it is also applying the knowledge and kind of like finding out where you are in this awakening process to actually start living the life you want. If you don't take the action, you are still part of the old system. You're not an active ingredient of the new system.
That's right. But I think that young people are doing this much faster than our generation. They have something in themselves which they can develop very pretty quick. And they have to watch only a movie or read a book, and they know they develop themselves pretty fast, and they know what they have to do, and they know what they don't want to do. So I think it's running faster and faster all the time, also getting closer to 2012. Some people say 2012 is the top of it, and then we are going into another dimension, and everything will change. So we will see.
What do you think? Because you've definitely said, kind of like 2012 and then beyond. Do you see that 2012 is going to be about social change? Do you think it is going to be about more awareness in this world? What do you see as this old world, so to speak, is dying, in the sense that we know that the conservative worldview of reality is something which is basically dying with the older generations, and that, as you're saying, the younger generations want to have something else.
Yeah.
How do you see this standoff? If how should I put this? 40 years down the line, it's clear that the younger generation will simply have outlived the older generation, and this new world will have been born. But that's still 40 years in the future. How do you see the standoff in the more immediate future? What do you see happening, or how would you like to see it go?
Yeah, how would you like to see? Well, what I see is that the younger generation, all the people will get around 2012, and I think it's all happening at this moment, will get a bigger awareness, another awareness. Everyone will be aware in the future, in the near future, that what you do to someone else, you do to yourself. And when that is clear to everyone, you get a complete different world. So some people say it's a kind of change of dimension. Other people say it's kind of change of awareness, but I think it's a combination of everything. We are going with the whole world and the people to another level. And the old world doesn't have answers to all the things which are happening now. So we have to look to it in another way. And that's only possible that people change. Because we tried this already for a couple of thousands of years, but we people stay the same. So we don't have the idea that it will change with the certain kind of people. But when the dimension is changing, the awareness is changing, and people know exactly what they do, the world will change, I think, and the people will react completely different. And that will happen around these days. Everything is getting chaotic. When you look 40 years back or look at these days, it's going so pretty fast. Nothing stays the same as it was. If it's politics, if it's nature, if it's religion, everything is changing, and so the people are changing, and because of that, we will get another awareness, and I think that will change our behavior.
And what do you think is going to be the essence of that new awareness? Kind of like what's the essence of it?
What do you mean exactly with that? Because
there's going to be a new awareness, you're saying.
Yeah.
What is typical of this new awareness? Is it the fact that they want to have a simpler life, as you already mentioned, or do you think there are other things which is part of this emerging awareness?
No, I think the mind is getting more open of all the people, so that the people know, we all know, who we are, what we are, what our purpose is here. Now, these days, most of people, let's say, no one knows who we are, what we are doing here. But I think soon we will know who we are and what we are, what we are and what our purpose is. And then you react completely different. Then you don't organize secret societies, or you don't kill people or whatever, because you know what it means. I think that's the way that all the people get more and more spiritual, and because of the change around 2012, will help with that. It's speeding up. That's what I think.
And this quest, this identification of what's happening, began for you by looking into a very old past and the Atlantis Egypt question. Do you feel that there is some resonance, some link between that distant past and our present, or how do you see those two behaving?
Yes, what is happening now has happened many times before, and the last one was around 12,000 years ago when Atlantis was disappearing. And what was happening at those days is happening now, but we have the possibility to change it into another direction, because Atlantis was disappearing because of struggling because between different parties. Now we have the possibility to let not happen what happened in those days, but we have to develop it in the right direction. So we have all the tools to do it. The right people are here, and I think the people who were at those days in Atlantis on Earth are back at this moment. So a lot of Atlantis souls, those indigo children, how do you call it, those there's a lot of names for it. They are back, and what we did wrong in those days, we have to do it right now, and I think we are into the right direction. I feel a lot of positive energy and possibilities.
Well, that's definitely a very positive conclusion to this episode of The Spirit Revolution, because The Spirit Revolution is obviously all about the ideas that we live in times of great change. And from a very important aspect, I always think of where the bookshop is situated. It's so close to Anne Frank, who was, you know, reporting on something which was dramatic and which typifies a young soul, so to speak, in the struggles of the Second World War, and she became a new voice. And very close near there is where you basically are touching upon the pulse of some of this new emerging trend of the new world of the Spirit Revolution, which is happening. So, Herman, thank you very much for being our special guest. If people want to meet Herman or visit the bookshop, they can do so. The address for the website is frontierbookshop.nl. It is located on the Leliegracht 42, which is in the very heart of Amsterdam, as I said, very close to the Anne Frank Museum Annex House. If you want to hear this episode of The Spirit Revolution again, you can do so in a number of ways. You can go to the BBS Radio Archives, where there are more than 50 episodes archived from the very beginning of this show. You can also listen to many more of the archive material of other guests which are appearing on the BBS radio shows, Channel 1 and Channel 2. You can go to thespiritrevolution.com. where you can see who we had in the past, and you can always listen to the 5 latest shows from there. And you can also go to iTunes, where there are more than a year of our shows available for download via the iTunes. Just check on The Spirit Revolution. You were saying, Herman, that this is a time when the old souls of ancient Egypt and Atlantis are coming back. And Kathleen would probably have said, the time returns. But as usual, we conclude with our sign-off, which is, until next time, the truth against the world.